Chapter 40. Was something else some mystery which I could not develop some expression about the countenance which slightly disturbed me, while it greatly heightened my interest. In fact, I was just in that condition of mind which prepares a young and susceptible man for any act of extravagance. Had the lady been alone, I should undoubtedly have entered her box and accosted her at all hazards. But, fortunately, she was attended by two companions, a gentleman and a strikingly beautiful woman, to all appearance a few years younger than herself. I revolved in my mind a thousand schemes by which I might obtain, hereafter, an introduction to the elder lady, or, for the present, at all events, a more distinct view of her beauty. I would have removed my position to one nearer her own, but the crowded state of the theater rendered this impossible, and the stern decrees of fashion had, of late, imperatively prohibited the use of the opera glass in a case such as this, even had I been so fortunate as to have one with me, but I had not, and was thus in despair. At length I bethought me of applying to my companion. "Talbot," I said, "you have an opera glass. Let me have it." "An opera glass? No. What do you suppose I would be doing with an opera glass?" Here he turned impatiently toward the stage. "But, Talbot," I continued, pulling him by the shoulder, "listen to me, will you? Do you see the stage box? There. No, the next. Did you ever behold as lovely a woman? She is very beautiful, no doubt," he said. "I wonder who she can be? Why, in the name of all that is angelic, don't you know who she is? Not to know her argues yourself unknown. She is the celebrated Madame Lalande, the beauty of the day par excellence, and the talk of the whole town. Immensely wealthy to a widow, and a great match has just arrived from Paris. Do you know her?" "Yes, I have the honor. Will you introduce me?" "Assuredly, with the greatest pleasure. When shall it be?" "Tomorrow, at 1, I will call upon you at B.S. "Very good. And now do hold your tongue, if you can." In this latter respect I was forced to take Talbot's advice, for he remained obstinately deaf to every further question or suggestion, and occupied himself exclusively for the rest of the evening with what was transacting upon the stage. In the meantime I kept my eyes riveted on Madame Lalande, and at length, had the good fortune to obtain a full front view of her face. It was exquisitely lovely. This, of course, my heart had told me before, even had not Talbot fully satisfied me upon the point, but still the unintelligible something disturbed me. I finally concluded that my senses were impressed by a certain air of gravity, sadness, or, still more properly, of weariness, which took something from the youth and freshness of the countenance, only to endow it with a seraphic tenderness and majesty, and thus, of course, to my enthusiastic and romantic temperament, with an interest tenfold. While I thus feasted my eyes, I perceived, at last, to my great trepidation, by an almost imperceptible start on the part of the lady, that as he had become suddenly aware of the intensity of my gaze. Still, I was absolutely fascinated, and could not withdraw it, even for an instant. She turned aside her face, and again I saw only the chiseled contour of the back portion of the head. After some minutes, as if urged by curiosity to see if I was still looking, she gradually brought her face again around, and again encountered my burning gaze. Her large dark eyes fell instantly, and a deep blush mantled her cheek. But what was my astonishment at perceiving that she not only did not a second time avert her head, but that she actually took from her girdle a double eyeglass, elevated it, adjusted it, and then regarded me through it, intently and deliberately, for the space of several minutes. Had a thunderbolt fallen at my feet, I could not have been more thoroughly astounded, only not offended, or disgusted in the slightest degree, although an action so bold in any other woman would have been likely to offend or disgust. But the whole thing was done with so much quietude, so much nonchalance, so much repose with so evident an air of the highest breeding, in short that nothing of mere effrontery was perceptible, and my sole sentiments were those of admiration and surprise. I observed that, upon her first elevation of the glass, as he had seemed satisfied with a momentary inspection of my person, and was withdrawing the instrument, when, as if struck by a second thought, she resumed it, and so continued to regard me with fixed attention for the space of several minutes, for 5 minutes, at the very least, I am sure. This action, so remarkable in an American theater, attracted very general observation, and gave rise to an indefinite movement, or buzz, among the audience, which for a moment filled me with confusion, but produced no visible effect upon the countenance of Madame Lalande. Having satisfied her curiosity, if such it was, she dropped the glass, and quietly gave her attention again to the stage, her profile now being turned toward myself, as before. I continued to watch her unremittingly, although I was fully conscious of my rudeness in so doing. Presently I saw the head slowly and slightly change its position, and soon I became convinced that the lady, while pretending to look at the stage, was, in fact, attentively regarding myself. It is needless to say what effect this conduct, on the part of so fascinating a woman, had upon my excitable mind. Having thus scrutinized me for perhaps a quarter of an hour, the fair object of my passion addressed the gentleman who attended her, and while she spoke, I saw distinctly, by the glances of both, that the conversation had reference to myself. Upon its conclusion, Madame Lalande again turned toward the stage, and, for a few minutes, seemed absorbed in the performance. At the expiration of this period, however, I was thrown into an extremity of agitation by seeing her unfold, for the second time, the eyeglass which hung at her side, fully confront me as before, and, disregarding the renewed buzz of the audience, survey me, from head to foot, with the same miraculous composure which had previously so delighted and confounded my soul. This extraordinary behavior, by throwing me into a perfect fever of excitement, into an absolute delirium of love, served rather to embolden than to disconcert me. In the mad intensity of my devotion, I forgot everything but the presence and the majestic loveliness of the vision which confronted my gaze. Watching my opportunity, when I thought the audience were fully engaged with the opera, I at length caught the eyes of Madame Lalande, and, upon the instant, made a slight but unmistakable bow. She blushed very deeply, then averted her eyes, then slowly and cautiously looked around, apparently to see if my rash action had been noticed, then leaned over toward the gentleman who sat by her side. I now felt a burning sense of the impropriety I had committed, and expected nothing less than instant exposure. While a vision of pistols upon the morrow floated rapidly and uncomfortably through my brain, I was greatly and immediately relieved, however, when I saw the lady merely hand the gentleman a playbill, without speaking, but the reader may form some feeble conception of my astonishment, of my profound amazement, my delirious bewilderment of heart and soul when, instantly afterward, having again glanced furtively around, she allowed her bright eyes to set fully and steadily upon my own, and then, with a faint smile, disclosing a bright line of her pearly teeth, made two distinct, pointed, and unequivocal affirmative inclinations of the head. It is useless, of course, to dwell upon my joy, upon my transport, upon my illimitable ecstasy of heart. If ever man was mad with excess of happiness, it was myself at that moment. I loved. This was my first love, so I felt it to be. It was love supreme, indescribable. It was love at first sight, and at first sight too, it had been appreciated and returned. Yes, returned. How and why should I doubt it for an instant? What other construction could I possibly put upon such conduct, on the part of a lady, so beautiful, so wealthy, evidently so accomplished, of so high breeding, of so lofty a position in society, in every regard so entirely respectable, as I felt assured was Madame Lalande? Yes, she loved me, she returned the enthusiasm of my love, with an enthusiasm as blind, as uncompromising, as uncalculating, as abandoned, and as utterly unbounded as my own. These delicious fancies and reflections, however, were now interrupted by the falling of the drop curtain. The audience arose, and the usual tumult immediately supervened. Quitting Talbot abruptly, I made every effort to force my way into closer proximity with Madame Lalande. Having failed in this, on account of the crowd, I at length gave up the chase and bent my steps homeward, consoling myself for my disappointment in not having been able to touch even the hem of her robe, by the reflection that I should be introduced by Talbot, in due form, upon the morrow. This morrow at last came, that is to say, a day finally dawned upon the long and weary night of impatience, and then the hours until knee were snail-paced, dreary, and innumerable. But even Stamble, it is said, shall have an end, and there came an end to this long delay. The clock struck. As the last echo ceased, I stepped into B.S. and inquired for Talbot. Out, said the footman, Talbot's own. Out, I replied, staggering back half a dozen paces. Let me tell you, my fine fellow, that this thing is thoroughly impossible and impracticable. Mr. Talbot is not out. What do you mean? Nothing, sir. Only Mr. Talbot is not in, that's all. He rode over to S immediately after breakfast, and left word that he would not be in town again for a week. I stood petrified with horror and rage. I endeavored to reply, but my tongue refused its office. At length I turned on my heel, livid with wrath, and inwardly consigning the whole tribe of the Talbots to the innermost regions of Erebus. It was evident that my considerate friend, Il Fanatico, had quite forgotten his appointment with myself, had forgotten it as soon as it was made. At no time was he a very scrupulous man of his word. There was no help for it, so smothering my vexation as well as I could, I strolled moodily up the street, propounding futile inquiries about Madame Lalande to every male acquaintance I met. By report she was known, I found, to all too many by sight, but as he had been in town only a few weeks, and there were very few, therefore, who claimed her personal acquaintance. These few, being still comparatively strangers, could not, or would not, take the liberty of introducing me through the formality of a morning call. While I stood thus in despair, conversing with a trio of friends upon the all-absorbing subject of my heart, it so happened that the subject itself passed by. As I live, there she is, cried one. Surprisingly beautiful, exclaimed a second. An angel upon earth, ejaculated a third. I looked, and in an open carriage which approached us, passing slowly down the street, sat the enchanting vision of the opera, accompanied by the younger lady who had occupied a portion of her box. Her companion also wears remarkably well, said the one of my trio who had spoken first. Astonishingly, said the second, still quite a brilliant air, but art will do wonders. Upon my word, she looks better than she did at Paris 5 years ago. A beautiful woman still. Don't you think so, Froissart? Simpson, I mean. Still, said I, and why shouldn't she be? But compared with her friend she is as a rushlight to the evening star, a glowworm to Antares. Ha, ha, ha. Why, Simpson, you have an astonishing tact at making discoveries, original ones, I mean. And here we separated, while one of the trio began humming a gay vaudeville, of which I caught only the lines, Ninen, Ninen, Ninen a bas Ninen de Lenclos. During this little scene, however, one thing had served greatly to console me, although it fed the passion by which I was consumed. As the carriage of Madame Lalande rolled by our group, I had observed that she recognized me. And more than this, as he had blessed me, by the most seraphic of all imaginable smiles, with no equivocal mark of the recognition. As for an introduction, I was obliged to abandon all hope of it until such time as Talbot should think proper to return from the country. In the meantime, I perseveringly frequented every reputable place of public amusement. And, at length, at the theater, where I first saw her, I had the supreme bliss of meeting her, and of exchanging glances with her once again. This did not occur, however, until the lapse of a fortnight. Every day, in the interim, I had inquired for Talbot at his hotel, and every day had been thrown into a spasm of wrath by the everlasting outcome home yet of his footman. Upon the evening in question, therefore, I was in a condition little short of madness. Madame Lalande, I had been told, was a Parisian that lately arrived from Paris. Might she not suddenly return? Return before Talbot came back, and might she not be thus lost to me forever? The thought was too terrible to bear. Since my future happiness was at issue, I resolved to act with a manly decision. In a word, upon the breaking up of the play, I traced the lady to her residence, noted the address, and the next morning sent her a full and elaborate letter, in which I poured out my whole heart. I spoke boldly, freely in a word, I spoke with passion. I concealed nothing even of my weakness. I alluded to the romantic circumstances of our first meeting, even to the glances which had passed between us. I went so far as to say that I felt assured of her love. While I offered this assurance, and my own intensity of devotion, as two excuses for my otherwise unpardonable conduct. As a third, I spoke of my fear that she might quit the city before I could have the opportunity of a formal introduction. I concluded the most wildly enthusiastic epistle ever penned, with a frank declaration of my worldly circumstances, of my affluence, and with an offer of my heart and of my hand. In an agony of expectation, I awaited the reply. After what seemed the lapse of a century, it came. Yes, actually came. Romantic as all this may appear, I really received a letter from Madame Lalande the beautiful, the wealthy, the idolized Madame Lalande. Her eyes, her magnificent eyes, had not belied her noble heart. Like a true Frenchwoman as she had obeyed the frank dictates of her reason, the generous impulses of her nature, despising the conventional pruderies of the world. She had not scorned my proposals. She had not sheltered herself in silence. She had not returned my letter unopened. She had even sent me, in reply, one penned by her own exquisite fingers. It ran thus. Monsieur Simpson will pardon me for not compose the beautiful tongue of his country so well as might. It is only the late that I am arrive, and not yet of a due opportunite for to lecture. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.